Once upon a time, if you wanted to watch your favourite television show, you checked the listings, you sat down and you watched it at the appointed time. And if the phone rang or if somebody dropped in and interrupted you, well, that was tough, you'd missed it. Well, now you can pause and replay the television, you can record what you want without tapes or discs, you can watch it whenever you want, and you can fast forward through the ads, which has got to be a worrying trend for broadcasters, since it's the ads that pay for much of the content. And now the likes of Netflix are hitting broadcast television even more. Laura Slattery of the Irish Times is with me now. Laura, just outline exactly how things have changed.
Well, probably the first change that people will have noticed would have been the launch of the players online, RTE Player, 3 Player, and TG Cahir has a player now as well. But last year we had quite a lot of developments. Netflix entered the market here with their on-demand service, which has quite a good price point, I think, at $6.99 a month, which is encouraging people to take up that option. And UPC launched its on-demand service, which quite crucially meant that people could watch the RTE Player and 3 Player through their TV screens. So people who might have been reluctant to watch on a laptop were suddenly able to watch catch up in that way. And I think about half of the UPC views relate to those, you know, RTE and 3 Player content and TG Cahir content, rather than the additional box sets and movies that they've added onto that service. In the meantime, Sky has developed quite a lot of new apps as well, which is encouraging people to watch what we would call non-linear television. So anything that basically doesn't go out live is classed as non-linear. So the people who sell advertising in our broadcasters know that and are making quite good deals with companies to advertise in those mediums. The other thing about it is that because it's often younger people who access television content in this way, companies that want to target a younger market find that it's quite a good option for them.
So Laura, just explain how the Netflix model actually works.
Well, Netflix has a library of content that they've done deals with distributors in the US and elsewhere on their service. And you can access that content from quite a lot of different devices. And you can even watch it on your TV screen, perhaps through your Wii or your PlayStation or on your iPad. But the company has been around for a long time in the US. It started out as a postal DVD service. And in recent times now, they have really helped drive their audience base by getting involved in original programming. Arrested Development, I think, was one of the first that was announced because, you know, Arrested Development was a comedy show that ran between, I think, 2003, 2006. Some people felt it had been axed prematurely by the Fox network. And there was demand, you know, from that fan base for more episodes. So Netflix got involved with the showmakers and then they've brought it back and those episodes are airing from, I think it's May 26th. But what happens is they all become available at once, I suppose. That's, so it's kind of mirroring the DVD box set marathon. And the same thing has happened with House of Cards, of course.
So Laura, you mentioned the fact that people are migrating online, that the audience is migrating online. That's what Pat Rabbit is targeting, isn't it, with his broadcasting charge? What's your assessment of that?
Yes. Now, most people who watch on-demand content do so in addition to content they watch on a traditional TV set. But there are some people who don't have a television set who use it as a substitute. You might even have a projector screen, you know, and you can tie that in perhaps with Apple TV or another device where you can stream your content. And Pat Rabbit, he's probably, you know, right to be slightly alarmed, because if those trends continue, you're going to have a situation where nobody has a traditional TV set to which the television license has always been pegged. But if you take the view that we should have a public service broadcasting in this country, then you have to adapt the license fee to reflect that. And so it's kind of a renaming of something more than a brand new charge, I would say.
Would you think there'll be much resistance to it?
Yeah, I think there will be some resistance. I mean, already, you know, anytime the issue is mentioned, you will see a lot of comments online from people saying things like, well, I never watch RTE anyway, I never listen to RTE, so why should I pay the licence fee? So I think it is going to be a difficult political sell for him. And if he can achieve that, that will be a big achievement for his time as Minister for Communications. Those changes haven't been made in the UK yet, for example, where among younger people there's an even stronger trend to avoid buying a television set because licence fee evasion there is so strictly policed.
So it's halfway through the minister's term, pretty much. Laura, how would you mark him out of 10?
Well, I think he's done a solid job in, I suppose, defending the principle of public service broadcasting. So if I was an RTE employee, I would be quite happy with his record in that regard. I think the bigger problem for him, and it's, you know, something that I'm sure frustrates him, is the delay with the publication of the Consumer and Competition Bill. He wants the power to block and improve media mergers to be transferred from Minister Bruton's department to his, so he can become a de facto minister for media. And we've seen some delays in this, and we don't know when it's going to happen. So, you know, if that doesn't happen within the lifetime of his role as Minister for Communications, then I think that would be a big disappointment.